Welcome, everyone, to another edition of No Filter Sports. It is Monday, Veterans Day, November 11th. No veterans among us, but we have great respect for veterans. You were too young for World War I. You were born then, and you were too... Well, you had a deferment.
I had a deferment.
You also were playing... Why didn't you have to go to Vietnam? Because baseball players weren't drafted back then, right?
If you had a legit... No. They could... Technically, was no draft with any kind of... request. That's really what it boiled down to. But there was a deferment if you were married in the early 60s.
Oh, okay.
And I was so horny, I wanted to get married quick.
You know, Denny's totally right about that. When I was a freshman at Michigan State, I declared myself 1A draftable that entire year when I was 18 because they weren't drafting 18-year-olds. Then if you had a child – and you were married, as Denny said, they didn't draft you at all. By the time I was 19, believe it or not, I was married and a father. But I can still recall going home to Detroit one weekend and talking to my mother in our kitchen. And she turned to me and she said, if you're drafted high, I did not raise three boys to be cannon fodder in an illegal, immoral war. I'm driving you to Windsor. I said, no, you're not, Mom. I'm driving myself before you get the chance.
we
don't do politics here, do we?
I was number 33 in the draft. I had a student deferment, and I would have been drafted in early 72, but the draft counselors said, because I did not want to get drafted and be cannon fire at the Vietnam War, but Nixon was running for re-election in 72 and ended the draft in the beginning of 72, so I made myself 1A. But slipped through because I was told that I wouldn't get drafted.
Well, my Denny was around B-52s for 5 years, as we all know. And then my son-in-law, Mark, was in the Navy for 5 years. My daughter-in-law, one of my daughter-in-laws, was in the military police in the Air Force. In fact, she met Denny in the Air Force, but this is a great story. She was a military cop. 5.5 years in the Air Force. She never wrote up one guy for one thing. She said, how can I write him up? He's defending the country.
That's right.
I said, in the UK?
Anyway, Veterans
and
Day.
Let's hasten to add here before we get off this interesting topic that we have so much respect for our veterans and our military, and it is so necessary for our defense. My whole thing is don't you dare send a single young American to die in an undeclared BS war. That's my whole thing
okay.
about it.
Okay, that's the end of politics for today.
No, this isn't politics, but my son Denny still does the military exercises, running the 26 miles twice a year, doing the 12-mile races. I mean, he's still into the get-in-shape, stay-in-shape type of thing. He's also had four back operations.
Speaking of stay-in-shape, I was looking at you.
Thank you. Thank you.
When the Braves cut you in 1972, have you exercised one day of your life since then?
Listen, I used to play golf every day.
Oh, that's what if you count that.
Okay. Eli, that's the dumbest question you've ever asked on this show.
Why is that?
Every program we do, he jumps to a conclusion eight times. Of course he exercises.
All right. Let's Michigan State is in the news, not just the game that they lost in ridiculous, abominable fashion on Saturday at home to Illinois, but this morning, this is Monday, as we say, November 11th, Charles Rogers dies at age 38. Not a lot of details now. As the week goes on, you'll probably learn more about it. But this guy was a tragedy from the beginning. And by the way, he got a $14 million. Last we could tell he was working in an auto shop somewhere in Florida. But this man, who's been destitute for many years, earned about $20 million.
Oh, my God.
He had a $14 million guaranteed when he was drafted by the Lions in 2003. He played 3 years, probably made $4 or $5 million more. So here's a guy that earned $20 million approximately and was broke very shortly after, which...
But remember this, Eli, that during 2005, Rogers was suspended for 4 games for a third violation of the NFL's substance abuse policy. As a result, NFL's filed a grievance claiming that his drug suspension violated his contract, which meant he was obligated to return almost all of that money you're talking about, the $14.2 million. And the Lions finally settled that on the figure $8.5 million that they wanted back from Rogers. Now, whether he still had the dough, I don't know.
I don't think he had it. He was anyway, so it's just tragedy one way or the other. Just
really
a dysfunctional kid.
And, really is, because he was such a great athlete.
And check this out. Here's how he started. But when he was drafted in 03, he started with touchdowns in his first two games and looked like a brilliant draft pick.
Yeah. Third and goal from the 4-yard line. Harrington. This one complete. Charles Rogers gets the feet down. Harrington. Rogers diving. Makes the catch for the touchdown. Reception.
There you have that. And, of course, they came off a great career at Michigan State.
Charles Rogers is one of the greatest college wideouts I ever saw in my life. And I'm not going to bust Matt Millen and the NFLs for drafting him. He was utterly an amazing player. By the end, which was 3 years later, he was so strung out, you know, and he was an alcoholic that when the NFLs finally released him in September of 2006, he had four different tryouts. And, of course, they timed him. He consistently recorded times in the 40-yard dash of 4.8 seconds. Mm. His peak was running 4.4s.
When did he sign again?
It was just a terrible.
03. He was drafted in 03.
And he was out by 06 or 08.
Yeah, he couldn't play.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So what happened? Do you remember this, Denny? He broke his clavicle after a really good start to the 2003 season. Okay, so now he comes back for 2004. And he breaks his clavicle again, which knocked him out all of 2004. So he was so devastated that the NFLs just allowed him to go home for the remainder of the season. And Millen said in an interview years later that in hindsight, he made a big mistake by letting Charles Rogers be away from the team for that kind of extended period of time. Because God knows what he was into.
Well, how about this?
He fathered eight children with four different women. Oh, I mean, this guy just was bad
news. He did an interview with Jemele Hill. I guess she was on ESPN at the time.
And
he attributed, you'll hear here, to getting hooked on opioids because of the clavicle injuries.
How much were drugs a part of your life in the NFL?
I was just really smoking. So when I jumped...
You mean marijuana?
Marijuana, right. Okay. So when I really jumped onto that pill game...
You mean prescription?
Yeah, prescription medicine. So when I jumped on that, that was after like my second break.
How often were you using marijuana?
Regularly.
So there, of course, but amid it all, he was smoking pot every day of his life, and it doesn't really mix, especially... if you're going to be doing it all day long, you know, being an NFL player.
You know,
what he claimed, of course, was that he needed the marijuana because of the tremendous pain from the clavicle injuries. And now, in hindsight, he probably was 100% right. So I don't hold that against him. Now, you did not mention we're going to have Jay Vinson on the program today. Michigan State basketball legend. Now, he's a lot younger than Rogers, but I bet he knew him. It'll be interesting to see what Jay has to say about this.
You know, in a little bit of self-confession here, when I broke my foot real bad, I broke it in nine places a number of years ago, and I mean like 7 or 8 years ago, and lo and behold, I got hooked on him. On the little white pills.
Really?
Yeah. You know me a long time. I've got kind of an obsessive behavior, mental approach to life anyway. And boy, I'll tell you one thing.
Amongst other things.
It was so easy. I mean, between Twinkies and Pepsi and Diet Coke trying to fight off the Twinkies, it was unbelievable.
Well, as you know, I am a fan of cannabis, but I have never even tried an opioid. That scares me.
Me too. It took a while to get off of them too.
The other tragedy before we get into the game, which is really, and it hits close to home for me because it's mental illness. I lost my daughter to mental illness, as you know.
Terrible.
But Cassius Winston's younger brother, Zachary, walked in front of a speeding locomotive Saturday night, committed suicide. Seems pretty much 100% sure that's what it was in Albion. And that is just stunningly. Winston played last night for Michigan State. I doubted that he would. I mean, less than 24 hours later, I mean, his family.
Did you watch it? Did you watch any of that game? It was their home opener against Binghamton.
No.
I did. And I was shocked to see, especially when Tom took him out at the end of the game, you know, to the thunderous applause from the fans, up at the Breslin. I didn't see any tears. I didn't see Cassius shed any tears. Izzo wasn't even crying. And, you know, what an emotional guy he is. In other words, that I read that as saying his brother, unfortunately, has been mentally ill for a long time. And they probably expected something like this to be coming eventually. I mean, it must have been just horrible.
It obviously shocked them. But you're right. It may be that, or you're so stunned at first that.
But let's not sit here and assume that.
But I saw you the day that your daughter died, and it didn't sink in because you and Sharon weren't crying either. It took a few days for it to just really sink in and realize that never is a long time to not see somebody alone.
And I'll
again.
Tell you this, if it wasn't for you being there for me that week, the week or 10 days after she had died, I don't know if I'd have got through the week because I remember the 3 days after she died, I remember nothing.
Yeah. Except
and you know, you toss that off as though it's common knowledge, but it isn't. And I want to repeat what you just said. Eli Zarrett is such a great person and a great friend. He was indeed there for you the entire time and really helped get you through the tragedy of your daughter's loss.
Well, it was
it was a tough
time. What else can you do? We were doing a show together at the time, and it was I saw it. I couldn't imagine it happening, and then, you know, many years later in a different way it happened to me. So the Spartans are let's say this first before we get to the Spartans. This is the big week. This is Michigan State week. This is supposed to be the best week of the year.
Let me put this into perspective.
Please, okay. Please put it into perspective.
I was going to put it in perspective.
Otherwise, we would not be able to.
You can talk about Christmas, Easter, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, and Ramalama Ding Dang, or whatever those people call it.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding?
This is the single highest holy day of every year. It's Michigan State Week, folks, and I'm not ready for it, being a Michigan State graduate.
I disagree with you. The high holy day of the year is when Michigan has to play Ohio State and when Michigan State has to play Ohio State.
Well, and this year, certainly the Michigan-Ohio State game, assuming that Michigan survives Michigan State on Saturday, they're 12-point favorites. Not that means anything, but certainly the Spartans are moving in the wrong direction, and to lose at Illinois at home the way they did. By the way, look at the two celebrations in the Big Ten. I mean, how much that hurt the Spartans, not just to lose the game that way, but Lovie Smith is put on Illinois, the shoulders, and they're celebrating on your field, one of the great hit wins in their history. They're bowl eligible. Actually, the Spartans could still be bowl eligible.
Yeah. Now, I want to add, fellas, that there is no truth. I've been researching this. There is no truth to the ugly rumors making the rounds that Saturday's Michigan State game has now been slapped with an R rating, material unsuitable for viewing by impressionable children. But it should be, because this is going to be really ugly in Ann Arbor.
How late at night do you stay up thinking about this BS? How late? Just give me an idea.
It's called show prep. He does a good job of show prep.
I'm going to call him one night about 1:30 in the morning and ask him what the hell's going on tonight.
And part of show prep, Dan, is, of course, while you were out signing autographs and making a lot of money in Michigan on Saturday, I was dutifully sitting in front of the television set watching this disaster, one of the most disgraceful performances I have ever witnessed by a Michigan State football team. And Eli, I bet you remember this. This includes what I watched from a dry press box as a student aide in 1973 when your Michigan Wolverines came into East Lansing and laid a 31-0 shellacking on the Spartans in a game-long driving rainstorm. Do you remember that, Eli?
73, vaguely. Yes,
you were
vaguely.
Too high back in the dorms. Yeah. Okay, fine. Well, I I've been saying all year long that Brian
Lewerke
is
72,
so
but okay.
overrated.
Yeah. Well,
Lewerke is
so,
my
not
God,
overrated.
He outdid himself. I don't care what his numbers were. He was horrendous. Two awful passes late in the second quarter that went for
interceptions. Talking about Lewerke?
You know, Michigan State should have been leading this game 35-3 at halftime. Instead, after the second interception, ex-Michigan quarterback Brandon Peters drives the length of the field. They score a touchdown just before the half, so it's 28-10. There were so many errors, ridiculous things that happened in this game.
Well, you know what? There you go again. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. Bottom line is it's a bad football team. It's been a bad football team all year. And what I'm very disappointed at is our head coach over there hasn't done anything to make it somewhat better at any level. There's no level that we play well. None. Think about it. Every ball game we played, even if we won, it was a strain.
Call Michigan and Michigan State we. I don't call them either because I'm a reporter.
Well, we shouldn't call anybody we, is right.
I call them we.
No, you don't. That's fine.
Why? Because I pull for them? I can't call them we?
Fine, whatever. Whatever. All right, call them whatever you want.
So it wasn't. You called the Lions we.
And I called them we, too.
You were rooting for the Bears on Sunday.
No,
so
I wasn't.
Versus we.
No, I had the Lions.
Anyway.
Yeah, you bet that. Well, let me call on Eli with this a little bit.
31-10 entering the fourth quarter. 31-10 they led.
Right.
At all.
It wasn't as though the kids didn't play hard or that D'Antonio doesn't care.
Oh,
but
he's
tired of beating up. Time for him to go. And what an arrogant jerk Mark D'Antonio's become, though he was never exactly any fun to begin with his drab personality. Did you guys see this? Here's a reporter question to D'Antonio in the news conference after the game. And I quote, Mark, what would tell the students, the alums, some of them are unhappy about the way things are going, what the future would be like? What would turn this around that maybe this is an aberration and not a trend? D'Antonio's response, next question.
Really?
What?
It's a legitimate question.
People think the word arrogance is only associated with some University of Michigan people?
On the other hand, do you want him to lead cheers? Do you want him to be picked up and everybody
No. It was a softball question.
I understand it was a softball question. But you know what? He doesn't have any answers anymore. He's done.
Yeah.
And I suspect I think you suspect too that he won't be here next year.
No, he's not going to be here next year.
These guys should be, believe it or not, bowl eligible because they have to play at comical Rutgers and they have horrendous Maryland at home the last game of the year. They should go to the toilet bowl. If they're going to accept a bowl bid with six wins, they should go to the toilet bowl. That's where they belong.
Well, that's in Flushing, New York. But what's the Motor City Bowl? So they're going to take that great trip to the sunny
The toilet bowl's in Nome, Alaska, and they play it outdoors on January 5th.
I didn't know that, but
that's where they get to go. Now, may I continue in this line of thought? Because this is the really critical issue. Because Denny brought it up. Everybody's talking about it. Who should replace D'Antonio? It looks like he's going to be done at the end of the year. You guys got anybody in mind? Because I got somebody.
Go ahead. What do you got in mind? What do you got? Brandon, you got somebody in mind? Go ahead.
I would like to see P.J. Fleck go in there.
Oh.
Why would Fleck leave Minnesota?
He just got a $34 million seven-year extension.
I understand, but I still think MSU is a bigger gig than Minnesota.
I got a better candidate than that, Brandon. Now, as you recall, D'Antonio came from the University of Cincinnati. And this is not going to besmirch his memory or his legacy at State. He did a great job for Michigan State. But if you haven't noticed, Cincinnati is now 8-0. And they're coming off a 48-3 rout of UConn on Saturday. Do you boys know who the coach at Cincinnati is? Do you? Coach at Cincinnati is Luke Fickell. He's from Ohio.
Yeah.
The former Ohio State coach.
Yeah.
He's from Ohio, knows every high school coach there in Michigan. He's only 46 years old, had head coaching experience, as we just mentioned. An Ohio State guy coaching Michigan State, you're damn right, and they better get Luke Fickell before somebody else does.
Time out. The Cincinnati NFL team may hire Fickell because Cincinnati NFL team sucks. They are really bad.
Yeah, the Bengals are awful.
That's a good point.
I think they're 0-8.
Yeah.
But they have a first-year head coach, don't they, Brandon? I think they do. Young guy.
But that makes a difference, 0-8.
They fired first-year head coaches before. The Giants just did it a couple of years ago.
That was quite a celebration after that Minnesota game.
Wow.
I got to tell you, the field was completely filled with people. Yeah. Minnesota 9-0 for the first time in 115 years. 6-0 in the Big Ten for the first time since 1961. Yeah. My God. And Fleck just signed a 7-year, $33.25 million contract. If anything, he'll get a bump, but he's not going anywhere. And we'll talk more about the Lions, a lot more football. Also, Jay Vincent's going to be on the show coming up a little bit later. We'll preview that. First, I want to tell you, though, guess what, Denny? Guess what I really like today?
Oh, no, not
I that. Like the snow because my Nautilus in the snow is amazing.
It's got to be
amazing. My Nautilus from Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln. What an amazing car, along with two other remarkable SUVs that Lincoln inaugurated this year, the Aviator as well as the Corsair. Lincoln sales are up, SUV sales up over 20% thanks to these three amazing new SUVs. Of course, you still got the Navigator, which is the 2018 North American Truck of the Year. So Lincoln's doing well, and Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln is the place to go. I've been buying my cars there for forever. I knew Hoot back in the 70s and his family. I consider them friends as well as having a great business. And a lot of people switch from other Lincoln dealerships because there's nothing like the the service there, the showroom. It's just really an amazing place. So come see the best line of American SUVs or buy online with the effortless ownership experience at starlinkin.com. Order your model, features, color, then roll in and pick it up. That's, of course, a Newt McInerney Starlinkin, a 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. And I guess you don't want to do the David Hall read right now.
Oh, yeah, sure I do. Sure.
What do you mean you don't want to do it? Yeah. David Hall's one of our top sponsors.
Well, I was
going to show the man some
respect.
Bob, look what's the matter with you?
Look at this. He underlines, he puts highlights everything on the page.
No, show him
the
other
one. So again, I say, what's the point of highlighting everything? Why not highlight nothing that's the same as highlighting everything? Go ahead.
I like the background.
David Hall, 800 five-star reviews. Go ahead.
All Financial has finally received 800 five-star ratings from their happy clients, and they're on a mission to hit 1,000 in 2019. David's team of mortgage pros gives every client VIP service, ensuring they feel like a name and not a number. Hall Financial will walk you through the process of buying your home and provide you with a top realtor in your area. Who wouldn't want that kind of service? Hall will cater to your schedule day or night and on the weekends. They work for you, and you won't be charged hidden or extra fees. You know what you're getting when you work with Hall. Call them today at 248-308-5000 if you're looking to purchase or refi like Eli did to get the money to get the car. Mm-hmm. Or chat with them online at davidhallmortgage.com. Give Hall Financial a chance today. Equal housing leader, NMLS number 1467435, 248-308-5000.
I took money out of my house so I could buy that in all
right,
of us.
Absolutely.
Now I got the house, and now I got the car.
What times are bad for Eli anyway. Zerat, the former multimillionaire.
You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. You know, I want to, you guys always give me the blank stare when I talk about the technology and how it's changed the game. And I talk about the technology, then when I watch these games and compare it to the old days, and you just kind of have the blank stare, like what am I talking about? This play in the Lions game yesterday proved that, again, showed the absurdity of what we have. I didn't play it for you beforehand, Bob, but you're going to hear this. This is amazing, because Marvin Jones makes a catch that's ruled a catch. 10, 15 years ago, no argument. It's a catch. Replay wouldn't reveal anything, and on they go. But what happens now is the super slow motion, I believe, actually distorts reality in its perfection, because any slight bobble seems like it lasts seconds instead of milliseconds.
Sure, it's supposed to.
So listen to this. Not only
but they watch it real time, also Eli. They don't just look at that slow mo.
Well, but in real time you can't tell, so they slow it down to make the determination.
They do the replay in real time.
So here, in other words, but the point is that perfect technology still doesn't solve the problem if the interpretation of what is a catch is up for grabs. So you'll hear Dan Fouts say it's incomplete. Ian Eagle had said it was incomplete. And Gene Steratore is starting to say it's incomplete when it wasn't. Here's how it sounded.
I think that's incomplete. I don't think that left hand was under the ball when it hit the ground.
Rules analyst Gene Steratore watching along in New York. What do you think, Gene?
I think that if he doesn't have possession, which I don't believe he has before it makes contact, that's here, Carl Sheffield.
Wow. And they just ruled it complete.
So as they're saying, as the NFL ref is saying it's incomplete, they call it complete. So here's the other problem. And Drew was talking about this earlier. I don't want to steal his idea because I think it's very cogent. And that is, why not just let the replay stick for itself? Why does it have to be overturned or not overturned? Because it was called a catch. So an inconclusive or conclusive proof. But if you look at it and see what it is, then who cares what it was originally called?
Well, why have replay if you're just going to call it what it is and move on, whether it's right or wrong?
Well, because they're saying inconclusive. Well, there was conclusive proof.
Sure.
Or was it inconclusive proof? Or does the super slow-mo really disguise the fact that in 2-to-1 slow-mo, which we had until 10 years ago, it's still a catch. When you slow it down 30-to-1, then you're getting into this area where are the pictures lying? Bob, thoughts?
Well, you know, boys, you look at that play, and my reaction is simple. You know, the Lions could have won that game at Chicago, and they probably should have won that game at Chicago, and they would have won that game if only that play. How about the NFL's leading 6-0 and they allowed the Bears to come back and score that TD pass with just 25 seconds remaining in the first half. If only Jeff Driskel hadn't thrown that INT at his own 26 in the third quarter. That led to another Bears TD just three plays later.
See, Bob, that's the problem. They're playing another team. The other team gets to play, too. They get to throw passes. They get to knock your FLs on their butts. They can do anything they want. Listen, I'll tell you what happened yesterday. The Polish guy finally let the ball fly. He's throwing the ball over the middle again. That's how he was such a star last year. He's throwing it up over the middle again. He's got great receivers over there.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the guys weren't running over the middle most of the time.
You know, Denny, I hate to say this, but SKI is a typical appendage of a Polish name. SKY is frequently Jewish.
Stop it.
Will you please?
Are you sure he's Polish, Denny? Bob, are you sure he's Polish?
Yes, I'm positive.
No. He said that because he forgot his last name, but that's okay.
He's the Eastern
European quarterback for the Chicago Bears. By the way, he had a passer rating of 34 coming in and 131 yesterday.
Oh, it was terrible.
Against the Lions.
It was great. But you know what? I thought the replacement guy, Driskel, did a pretty good job.
He did a decent job.
The first half, he really looked good.
Very athletic, man. He caught his own tip pass. He was drafted by the Red Sox.
What a hell of a thing. After 136 games, all of a sudden the coach comes to you and say, oh, by the way, you're playing Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's a whole other thing. But Stafford's
got a broken back. He has a broken
back.
Somebody
please explain this to me.
Fractured bones in his back. Not the same thing he suffered last year when Michael Harris said that he revealed that he had a broken back. Not related to that injury, which is a bony projection off of each vertebra in his back.
Don't you think that you can't play like this, can you? Don't you risk paralysis possibly?
I don't know.
We're talking bones
here. If only Matthew Stafford had been able to play Sunday. Oh,
Bob,
my God.
I don't see anything funny about this. This guy could be wind up paralyzed with bones flying all over his back.
He's not paralyzed yet. He's made his money.
Slapstick. Did you guys like that 4th-and-1? 2:25 to go at the Bears' 36-yard line. Complete pass to McKissick for a first down. And I'm thinking, the FLs are going to win this game. Tweet! Offensive pass interference.
But I'm going to tell you something. I looked at that five times. They never showed the replay, and they never confirmed that it was Galladay was called for the offensive pass interference.
Yeah, he was away from the ball.
He made contact with the guy covering him, but within the 5 yards and nothing else after that. So I don't know what that penalty was, and the announcers never explained it or showed Galladay. So that was a non-call. I wish I'd gotten a little more clarity on that.
Did you like Driskel's imitation of Orlovsky on the very last play of the game? Throwing into the end zone to win the game. Tweet over the line of scrimmage.
Just by a yard and a half, though.
I want to tell you what bothers me a little bit about this regarding Stafford. They're not giving out a lot of information about the injury. Just saying it's something in the back, broken bones, doesn't say much. Is this guy done? Could he possibly be looking at the end?
Plus, we didn't know. Apparently, it happened late in the Oakland game. We didn't really see. He didn't leave the game or anything. So
I always check the internet right before we start recording this show. And right before we started today, a news story broke that the NFL has just announced that they are investigating the Detroit Lions for the way they handled this Stafford thing. Because a lot of people knew Saturday that he was not going to play. He was already out. And the NFL still listed him as questionable up until game time on Sunday. So there's another brouhaha. And then we have the case, the headline in the Detroit papers.
Wait a minute,
Monday
Bob.
Morning.
What's the brouhaha?
That they didn't.
You have to be honest and above board about injuries.
So many hours, right?
If he's not going to play, and you know Saturday he's not going to play, you can't say he's a game time decision and questionable.
Okay,
and you don't know when they knew that. If he heard it in the Oakland game, they could have known on Tuesday or Wednesday that he wasn't going to play.
Well, you know, if he had hurt himself at all, they'd have taken an MRI early on in the week.
Yeah. Here's the headline in one of the Detroit papers on Monday morning. As again, we record this. Lions Darius Slay quote. Things will get ugly if we don't win out, huh? Because he's thinking they're going to make the playoffs. Brandon, do we have a comment about that?
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
Well, you know, right now the Lions are 3-5. You double that, They're 6-10. That's what they were last year. Yeah. So they're the same team that were last year. And, I, you know, depending on what happened, is it Dallas this week?
They're playing Dallas Sunday. Here, yeah. They still got to play at Minnesota, and they close at home with Green Bay. Does that sound like playoffs to you?
Well, Dallas lost last night at home to Minnesota, the Sunday night game. Curious to see. And coming off a loss, teams always play better. I think Dallas comes here and wins, then you will get some serious talk about Patricia getting fired, I think.
Yeah. By the way, I want to say something about one of the Lions players for whom I have tremendous respect. Do you know who the all-time percentage leader is in the history of the National Football League for field goals made? 71%. That's Matt Prater. And the next 50-plus field goal that Matt Prater kicks moves him past the Lions' own Jason Hansen and into second place on the all-time NFL list behind Sebastian Janikowski. What a kicker this kid is. And to think that Denver just cut him, which is how the Lions got him.
Matt Prater, because of a
drunk driving thing, right?
He was a serious alcoholic who had to go through rehab.
Okay.
And so that, you know, rehab is not a sure thing. People have to go through rehab sometimes 4, 5, 6 times. So there was reason to doubt that he would be deserving of a long-term contract.
I know if my Bears had Prater, I'd be about 7-3 right now.
Wait a minute, 71%. Jason hit more than 71% of his field goals, didn't he?
Well, that's what they had on the screen as I was watching the game once. So they fronted that
Jason
on the TV screen.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I think it was better than that. Yeah. So I tell you, I ran into Jason at we work out at the same club. I was talking to him the other day because Vinatieri missed another one yesterday. So Vinatieri now at age 46 has missed 6 field goals and 5 extra points. And
you know who missed one yesterday, too, don't you? My guy in Chicago.
Oh, Pinero. Yeah. Eddie Pinero. Eddie the P. Anyway, we're going to talk to Jason. We're going to get him on the show hopefully next week. He said he'll do it. He just couldn't this week. But, you know, Vinatieri, 46 years old, and, you know, you lose your edge a little bit, and he certainly lost his edge.
And you don't practice as much. You just don't practice as much. No. I can look back at my career towards the end of it when you were losing it. You thought you were losing it. You didn't work out as hard. You just didn't for some reason.
But you never worked out.
Oh, I worked out all the time.
I forgot about the bowling. That's right.
You forgot about the bowling and all the running I used to do between starts.
Oh, you didn't run.
How about throwing every day? Does that count?
Yeah. No.
See, none of this counts in your world.
You don't. You haven't worked out a single day since 1972.
Not true. We just jumped to 3 conclusions.
Wait a second.
You never. You walk on a golf course.
Shut his mic off for about an hour. You know. The thing about it is, I worked out a lot. I played golf every day.
That's not working out, Denny.
I walked.
That's not working out.
It isn't? And hit 1,000 balls a day?
Wait
a second. I hit 1,000 balls a day.
You see, you're just proving you don't understand what exercise is.
So did the Stadlers and so did John Daly, for goodness sake.
And I'll tell you one thing. It improved the golf game and it improved my conditioning. You know what I'll do?
John Daly.
You know what else I'm going to do? I'm going to bring pictures next week.
Yeah, well, at least you didn't chain smoke while you were walking.
Yeah, well, let's just put it this way, Eli. I loved Denny McClain and I loved watching him pitch his whole career, but I sure as hell don't want to watch him pitch now. And that goes the same thing for Vinatieri. You got to know when to go. It's time.
Yeah, well, it's definitely time for him. I think that decision's been made for
him. I didn't know when to go. They invited me to go, though.
Anyway, there were some other ridiculous calls yesterday. Did you see the one on Aaron Rodgers in the end zone where they called it roughing the passer?
Oh, yeah.
The guy tackled him as he released the ball and did his
best.
That was
not a penalty.
Awful. And then Tony Dungy, who was really been outspoken for the first time in his career about these pass interference calls. And in the Bucs-Tampa game, I don't know who the players were, it was in the end zone. Tampa clearly interfered with the Bucs receiver. They reviewed it. It clearly hit him well before the ball got there. Dungy's comment was, it wasn't overturned. I don't know why. So, a lot going on in football.
I've never seen so much controversy. Maybe obviously it's because of the video, but I've never seen so much controversy with the calls.
Actually, they did overturn another pass interference yesterday, so that's like 6 out of 16.
You got a guy, Denny, sitting across from you who matriculated at the University of Michigan. You don't think there's been a lot of controversy? Why don't you ask him about the phantom USC touchdown in the Rose Bowl by Charles White that beat Michigan? Go to ask Eli about that. Always been controversy. Always been huge controversy.
I'm waiting.
Dankinger at first base in the World Series. You go on and on.
He's getting ready to ask me. Yes, they tore the ball out. It was Jerry Meter, I believe, tore the ball out of White's hands about the 2-yard line. He flew over the goal line. They called it a touchdown. The replay proved that he fumbled it, but back then there was no review. So they lost the game. Michigan did in the Rose Bowl, the 79 Rose Bowl, on a phantom
touchdown. Ever since then, Michigan's been getting bad breaks. That's just a shame.
If only. If only.
My God.
Okay.
Are you going to a commercial break? Because
well,
I got some other
could.
Stuff not related to football.
I do want to talk about Antonio Brown and
yes, Antonio
more,
Brown.
More football going on. And I don't. The biggest story of all that we have ignored is the Chase Young story, where you borrowed money from a neighbor to fly your girlfriend to a game, and you paid him back, and that can get you suspended and end your college career. Just like if I lent you $15 to go eat lunch and you paid me back, you're suspended and can't play anymore.
Really?
That's how ridiculous these rules are. Anyway.
You and I were having a conversation about this. This is the Ohio State star, of course, for those of you who may not know. And on the surface, I accept it for what it is, that it is utterly ridiculous that he would be suspended for this. But is your personal feeling, Eli, that this might be just the tip of the iceberg with this kid?
Oh, well, maybe. Maybe, maybe not. Don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah,
and you may be right. But on the other hand, that goes on every day someplace around the country at major major or minor universities. There's no mystery. The kids still got to rock and roll every day. And if they got to rock and roll with their girlfriend, they're going to figure some way to get her to that game.
Why, if he committed this recruiting or whatever you want to call it, this violation, everybody at Ohio State is behind him. Nobody's saying it's regrettable, it shouldn't have happened. They all know it's ridiculous. We'll get into that more. But great eyesight. That's the lifestyle gift we all seek and cherish. I'm so thankful that I can see 20/20 at a distance and I can see up close. I don't need reading glasses at my advancing age. And there's a reason for that. I went to the Aldo Eye Center and I got what's called multifocal lens exchange. I got rid of my old lenses. I got new ones that are bionic and I will see perfectly for the rest of my life. If you're 45 and over and hate your reading glasses, go there and check that one out. And of course, if you're under 45 and want to get rid of your glasses and contacts, call the Aldo Eye Center. Dr. Yaldo is the most experienced in Michigan. He's done over 30,000 custom LASIK procedures. And I tell you, by the way, over half or more than half, the majority get better than 20/20 vision. Imagine that. The evaluation is free. Get the best, pay the least. Dr. Yaldo will also gladly meet any competing offer you may have gotten. Just call him. You got nothing to lose except those contacts and glasses. 800-398-EYES, 800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. And if you're worried about having enough money to pay for stuff like that, you call Luke Nowacki.
We call you.
No, I don't give money away, and I can't help you manage yours. I've had a hard enough time managing mine. That's why you need a guy like Luke Nowacki at Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. He'll protect your assets. He'll guard you to have a future that will keep you comfortable and take care of your kids, take care of weddings, anniversaries, whatever, your retirement. So call Luke at 248-663-4748. He'll create a plan to help you reach your financial goals, whether it's retirement or you're still a young man and I'm worried about your future obligations. 248-663-4748. Advisory service off the Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Other marketing names, products, services, reference here, independent of Royal Alliance Associates. And you are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Jay Vincent, coming up a little bit later. Fascinating career. Won a national championship with Greg Kelcer and Irvin Johnson. Spent 5 years in the Slammer from 2011 to 2016. He's willing to talk about it, what happened, what he did wrong, and how he's trying to atone for it. He has a new book out, too, so we'll talk to Jay Vincent.
Before we jump in anywhere else, today's Armistice Day, Veterans Day, right?
Yes.
And Don Cherry got his butt in trouble again the other day.
Oh, yeah?
Don Cherry, you know, the great outspoken Canadian broadcaster.
Yes, of course. Grapes.
Don Cherry's remarks the other day, he started screaming at the new immigrants not honoring the country's fallen soldiers in Canada and the United States. Listen to what he says. He says, "You people, your love of our way of life, you love our milk and honey. At least you can pay a couple of bucks for a poppy or something like that," Cherry said on Saturday night's Coach's Corner. And then, of course, the network came down on him really hard and said his remarks were inappropriate. He should not have said it. They didn't fire him. But I hope to God he's not. He's 85, and he is, you know what? Saturday night in Canada would not be Saturday night in Canada without Don Cherry.
Well, I don't know what he said specifically. Cause
I just read it to you.
Denny just gave you the quote.
No, but I meant...
And Grapes is always on talking about buying those little red poppies they sell on the street corner.
No, the point is, Did he stereotype all immigrants as being disrespectful?
That's what they felt he did.
That's yes. what he did.
That's
what
that's wrong. He did. That's ridiculous.
In fact, the Sportsnet president for whom Cherry works, Bart Yabsley, said the comments were, quote, offensive and discriminatory. So many Canadians, although they all watch, and believe me, I'm talking about the U.S. border towns, too. I watch every Saturday night of my life as well. They don't like Cherry, and they don't like his far right-wing political stance,
right.
but you watch him anyway. I was surprised to see that Ronnie McLean came out and issued a public apology on Sunday himself, but he should have done something to stop Cherry. He should have called him on it, but he didn't do it. And I'm telling you, the grapes is headed the same way Woody Hayes was headed, and we all knew it. There's going to be one big incident, and that's going to be it.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to stop him. He's going to continue to do what he does, and his right-wing politics do get in the way of his broadcasting once in a while. But you know what? He's been on the air for how many years? 200, 250 years? He's
something
been
like
on
that.
The, something like that. Great guy. I don't know if you've met him personally. But
oh,
man,
hell yeah.
He's, for the lack of a better term, you'd love him. He would come across as a rock and roller. I'm telling you. He's that kind of guy.
Yeah. Well, he's got to be a little more.
Now, boys, I got a question for you two. Could you tell me, please, what major sports event occurred yesterday?
Rugby?
Was it a marathon? No.
Rugby?
Sports event.
Figured I would get this from you guys. You know, I'm in the same boat you were. I did not know. What major sports event?
Yeah,
old
something.
Friend Roger Faulkner, Eli, you know him well, the dapper Englishman who's promoted soccer in Detroit for many years. He and I were in a Twitter rant on Sunday, good-natured, of course. Danny, I think you probably know Roger. Yeah. Apparently, they played the MLS Championship game Sunday on national TV.
Oh.
Okay, that's Major League Soccer. Seattle beat Toronto. Gasp. Have you ever heard of such a thing? Gasp. 3-1, 4 goals. This game was played in front of the largest Seattle crowd in history, and that includes the Seahawks. 77,000 at CenturyLink Field. So Roger is tweeting me, is this because soccer's really going to make it? Millennials are really starting to support soccer.
It's
and I told them, bollocks, as the English say. We have huge soccer crowds here where I am in South Florida and in New York. And I'm telling you, and don't take this in any kind of Don Cherry fashion, it's just a fact. The majority of these people who are such rabid soccer fans in the U.S. are immigrants who do not speak English as a first language.
Right.
It is their game. They love the game.
Well,
so
and they're going to go out and see.
I don't think it's any big
it,
deal
but,
that they had 77,000 given those circumstances.
But, Bob, they don't go out in the huge numbers over a season period of time. They don't.
I agree with that.
You know, that's their problem. They can't get enough energy yeah. to get a crew out there. And I'll tell you something else. 77,000 tickets. I'd like to know how many were free.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Now, I would say – I've always said this, that in my opinion of the games that I know – the three most boring games in the entire world are cricket, soccer, and God, Danny's going to hate this, baseball.
Oh, go to hell.
But if you grow up, we're from the golden era of baseball, and we love baseball, and we love the game. And that's why we are such fans of the game, and we love it so much because we grew up with it. Soccer people don't seem to understand why we Americans would consider their game that they grew up with boring, but I can at least see why other people around the world
sure.
would consider baseball
you have
boring.
To appreciate baseball. You have to appreciate the game within the game. But here's the reason soccer isn't popular. I'm going to tell you why.
Tell me why in a second.
Okay.
Did you ever coach your daughters?
In soccer?
And I coached all my kids
yeah,
in soccer.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I played high school soccer. I like soccer. The problem with
you
soccer.
You look like the kind of guy that would play soccer.
The problem with soccer is it doesn't involve the hands.
Right.
We are hand-eye coordination country. The shooting the three-pointer, throwing the curveball, throwing the spiral.
Home runs.
Catching, home runs. You know, well, right. We're into ball sports.
Stealing first base.
And soccer.
The biggest problem with soccer is that we, at least in the North, we have hockey. It's the exact same thing. You advance an object up a surface, take a shot, and put it past the goalie. You don't see a lot of 1-0 NHL games, but if you do, each goalie stood on his head and made 50 saves.
Well,
virtually every soccer match is 1-0, and there are 4 legit scoring chances the entire game.
Here's another sport where they run up and down the field, contact each other, dangerous game,
yeah.
brilliant hand-eye coordination, unpopular. That's lacrosse, the original American game.
I don't understand it.
Because
we don't know it.
Because we don't know
it. We don't
do
that in Michigan. Well, you're from New York and Massachusetts, but in Michigan and in Chicago, where Denny's from, we just, it wasn't part of our lives. I still don't understand the rules of the game.
Yeah. Anyway, you mean lacrosse.
Yeah. Hey, I got a baseball note, unless you, I want to mention this. I think you probably have it in your notes.
Go ahead.
You ready?
Go ahead.
I thought that was a very interesting piece by Anthony Fennec in the Detroit Free Press over the weekend about the Tigers firing Toledo manager Doug Mankiewicz, despite having led the Mud Hens to their first playoff berth in more than a decade this past season. So, from his perspective, Mankiewicz's opposition to premature big league promotions were not welcome. There was a lot of pushback from him against what the Tigers are saying. Let's bring this kid up. Mankiewicz is saying they're not ready yet. The problem is, this is a quote from Doug, you need people that are going to tell you in your organization, no, that's not really a good idea. But he says the Tigers, Avila in particular, just want yes men. When Avila says, this is what we're thinking about doing, yes, sir, Al. Oh, that's brilliant, Al. That's the Avila way, right? And that's why this guy who did a great job at Toledo is no longer with the Detroit organization.
Well, there's another reason he's not with them, too. He's not producing real good players. You got to listen, when you sit in the minor leagues for a couple of years,
he normally works with the talent they give him, Denny.
Let me finish. You normally produce. You produce players. You don't only get guys with monster talent. You get guys with borderline good talent, and then you got to produce them. You got to make them understand the game, the cutoff man, the hit and run, all of the other things that go into the game. They're not teaching that at AA or AAA.
There's a big problem with the Tigers minor league. Leagues, and that is, I don't know whether it's education or whether it's training. It's the fact that they don't have very good players. And so none of these youngsters.
But that's Mankiewicz's fault?
No, it's not Mankiewicz's fault. No, maybe developing them to a degree, but no, I don't think.
The AAA level?
The Tigers had no choice but to try people. The guys on the Major League roster were losing every night. They had to try and see who's going to help us in the future. So they auditioned
everybody
and came up with very, very little. We still haven't done the Chase Young thing, which is stunning to me.
You just mentioned it.
But think about it. Think of this. And by the way, Ryan Day, the coach of Ohio State, says, adversity reveals character. Our character is the forefront of this game. This is when they crushed Maryland 73-14. We show we're made of something special here, and that this penalty to Chase Young, this is part of our adversity. We support him 100%. Great kid. But nobody's saying, it's outrageous. How can they suspend him?
You just said this, in the last segment of the show.
I can't think of it.
Have they suspended him?
Did he break any laws?
Four games,
no.
They cut it back to two. They might have cut it back to two now.
You see, I think intent's got a lot to do with it. If he didn't know what the rule was, he didn't intentionally do anything wrong.
But what? My only point is this.
Yeah.
Think of the rules we have in the NCAA. If what happened was a poor kid, who, by the way, is technically worth or will be worth tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, borrowed $11,000. Part of it, he wanted his girlfriend to be able to see him play in the Rose Bowl.
$11,000?
I take that back. It wasn't $11,000. That was what Penny Hardaway lent the kid in Memphis. I'm sorry. That's the next story.
I was going to say, that's a different.
No, he borrowed a small amount of money. It may only have been a couple of hundred dollars.
Yeah.
And so to let her go to, and that's going to get him. So, in other words, I can't borrow money. I can't borrow money for anything.
Isn't that
ridiculous? Think of that rule.
Yeah. So when you get the money from your parents, it's not a loan. They're just giving it to you.
Well, yeah. The way it's supposed to be is the parents are supposed to borrow the money under the table from a booster and then give it to the kid.
That's the implication that this guy who lent him the money was a booster. But as I said to you, Eli, on our phone conversation earlier, you tell me what guy down there in that area of Ohio is not an Ohio State booster. Yeah. Everybody is.
Yeah. Well, this is what happened to this kid. So Chase Young will be the number one pick in the NFL draft. The number one pick, presumably, in the NBA draft is the 7'1" center for Memphis, freshman James Wiseman. Yes, projected number one pick. When Penny Hardaway was a high school coach, he helped this kid move from out of state for $11,500. Now Penny is the coach of Memphis, and the kid is ruled ineligible because they're saying Penny was a booster because he went
to
Memphis.
Anyway. They defied the NCAA, and he played anyway.
Right, right. And they're totally on his side. So the rules are just... I hate to sound like a broken record, but
well, maybe
so ridiculous and convoluted, and that's why it's all falling apart. I don't know what the future is.
Well, I do
now. Genie's out of the bottle, and yeah. How do you pay these guys?
Genie's out of the bottle. They're now voted to go ahead and do the likeness image thing. They're going to let the kids make some money. All of it's out of the bottle now. Now we'll just have to see what they produce.
See how it plays out, or if that's what they that's
get the rid of the rules. The rules don't count.
Well, Eli, you're speaking of big men in basketball. Blake Griffin is finally back for
Thank
the Pistons.
Goodness.
They play, or they played, depending upon when you hear this particular program, at Minnesota on Monday night. So that's obviously going to help them. In the wake of the Pistons' loss on the road at Indiana Friday, surprising because they've dominated them. I was looking at the box score to see how that could have happened since Detroit did own them. Drummond got into some foul trouble, slightly subpar game for him. And again, I keep asking the question. They lose this game primarily because Drummond didn't play. Of course, Derrick Rose was out again, too, with hamstring problems. Uh-oh. Drummond's not staying in Detroit. What the hell are they going to do next year when he leaves for free agency?
Don't know. They're going to have to rely on who they got left, and it may not be much because Blake Griffin is we have to say goodbye to our radio audience, WCWA in Toledo, WDFN in Detroit. Jay Vincent, come up a little bit. You have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay.
So anyway, I also want to say this one more thing to reinforce an idea that I think most people know. I noticed next to the name in the box score of Derrick Rose having not played that Jay Bone did not play either for the Pistons on Friday night. That was a coach's decision. Not to myself, I'll ask you guys too. Who the hell is Jay Bone on the Detroit Pistons roster?
He's related to Stafford with the bones in his back.
Yeah, right. So anyway, so I checked him out and I saw that this was Jordan Bone, a rookie from Tennessee. Now, I saw him play a few times last year, and I love that kid. He's a shockingly quick point guard who plays a whole lot of defense. And I'm saying this to display, again, the huge difference between college and the pros, between being a great college All-American as Jordan Bone was and a successful pro. He could be good eventually. I don't know. But when I watched him last year, he seemed like a surefire pro to me, and I have no idea why it escaped all three of us that the Pistons had gotten him on a draft night deal after he was selected by New Orleans in the second round.
The Pistons are giving away tickets. They're hard to really follow because you know right now that they may make the playoffs, but not really. If they had everybody healthy this year, if Griffin was healthy and Reggie Jackson was healthy – and Derrick Rose is healthy, they'd be a 43, 44, 45 win team maybe and get into the playoffs. So, again, we're looking at another lost season. By the way, they have not won a playoff game since?
Civil War.
2008, when the North defeated the South. That's right.
That's right.
They marched to Atlanta, and that's when the Civil War ended.
General Lee, there he is again.
And it looks like Antonio Brown is not going to play anymore.
I want to tell you guys something. I believe he may still play this year, a game or two or three, because he's got teams at his door now. He's a great talent. He's a great talent. Unbelievable. And I just think
he screwed three teams in less than a year.
I know that.
He screwed the Steelers.
I understand
that. He screwed the Raiders, you know, and he screwed the Patriots.
But this is like the Patriots. They want Gronk back. They're asking Gronk to come back. Mr. Kraft is calling him like at 3-4 times a week saying, listen, once we get in the playoffs, I want you back to play on our team.
I don't blame him. That team is really in deep trouble. I saw they lost a game like the weekend before last.
Yeah, they did.
They better marshal all the reserves and get them out there, or New England has no chance.
Of course, they lost to an outstanding team, the Baltimore Ravens. Lamar Jackson, by the way, had the only guy to have two perfect passer rating games in a season.
Yeah.
His second one, 158.3.
Yeah, for the Ravens on Sunday, I saw that. Hey, boys, how about Robbie Fabry? Or Fabry? I don't even know how he pronounces his name correctly.
Yeah. I think we said Fabry, didn't we?
The former St. Louis Browns number one pick 5 years ago. He just never developed. So he was traded to the Wings last week. Stevie Y picked him up in exchange for Jacob De La Rose. I wasn't crazy about him.
He got
I didn't
from the Blues,
mention
right?
that deal here. Because you know what it seemed like?
He got him from the Blues.
I said that.
Okay.
Former Blues number one draft.
Oh, you said the Browns. You said the Browns. Okay, that's close enough.
I did? Okay. Yeah. I'm getting old here, or I am old. You know what this looked like to me? Another Tweedledee for Tweedledum trade. But the kid comes out and he scores two goals against the Bruins in Detroit Friday night in a shocking Wings win over Boston. And then he has a great assist on Sunday night's winning goal in the final minute by Anthony Mantha in a 3-2 win over Vegas. You know, in Stevie Y we trust, right? Really? Just sit there. We'll wait and see what happens.
He's done that before.
I got the mailbag too, boys, whenever you want to get to that.
Let's get to that. Go ahead. Let's get to that.
I'd like to hang on 1 second. Do we want to talk about Major League Baseball, the strike?
The strike?
That's eventually going to happen.
Are they on strike now?
Yeah, Tony Clark has jumped off the bridge, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, well, the deal doesn't expire until after the 2020 season, so it's not imminent.
Yeah, but he should shut up right now. Leave things stay quiet, and they can negotiate in the back room. We don't need to negotiate in the papers.
You know what, Danny? I agree with you. And it, to me, it just smacks of greed. People see that and say, these guys are making millions and millions and millions of
dollars.
Don't
go there, Bob.
You know, the greed, just shut up and get this thing done, okay?
Yeah, but
we're always slapped in the face with money in baseball.
But don't go there.
Don't go there with the greed, okay? Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what we did last week, and that leads off the mailbag. Tony, well, the Polish pronunciation would be Krajewski, but it's Krajewski written that way.
Eastern
love
European.
The show. Been listening since day one. I love the interaction between the three of you. Who says old guys can't talk sports? Keep up the great work. And now concerning our little backyard brawl from Thursday's show, where Eli and Denny shamelessly tried and miserably failed to beat me up on the issue of Marvin Miller potentially going into the Hall of Fame and the havoc he wreaked on baseball. Daniel Lee Emery tweets, good show, Bob. I was cracking up with you and Denny going back and forth. Greg Morley, I thought I was listening to Let It Rip for a minute. It was a good show, Bob. Iffy the Dopester, our buddy. Bob, today's show was one of the funniest to date. The mud wrestling topic was hilarious. And if you folks don't know what I'm talking about, go back and listen to the previous show because it was hilarious. So Iffy continues, Denny and Eli do not get that the ridiculous contracts are pricing out sports for so many normal fans. $15 for a beer, $80 to $100 for an infield seat minimum is ridiculous. Only 6-8 big market teams tend to mostly make the playoffs. Somewhere, and listen to this, fellas, somewhere there has to be a balance, if he writes, between the sums paid today and the stupidly low amounts players earned back then when Denny pitched.
Well, quickly stated, as long as people go through the gates and continue to pay $8 and $10 for a beer, they're going to keep their prices at $8 and $10 a beer. All right? That's the way it is. That's the economy.
Until they don't anymore.
They do.
Then it'll change. But, you know, it's just the way capitalism works.
Yes, that's the way
it
works.
You can't change a system.
But isn't it working when attendance and TV ratings are going down?
Bob, you may think that the beer is such a big issue. It isn't. Let me tell you, they get you.
I don't drink beer. It's not for me.
I don't either. But they get you on the other side. Now they got suites for, you know, we took a whole crew up there recently about 3 months ago. It cost us $555 to feed everybody. I almost died. I almost jumped out of the suite.
Listen, Bob, I agree with you and Iffy that the prices are ridiculous. But they generate the revenue, and there are people that pay it. That's just we overpay for everything in America, from healthcare to beer. Everything we pay more than they pay in other countries, because with the consolidation of businesses, you know, you get less competition. What we pay for internet and phone is like two or three times more what they pay in Europe for it. We just overcharge for everything in America. It's the way it works. But, you know, if it's a $10 billion business and the arbitrarily, whatever.
They are. $9.5 billion this year.
$10 billion business. And they have it worked out, as they do in the NBA and the NFL, that half go to the players, half goes to management. Then that's why the salaries are high. The problem in baseball isn't that the players are underpaid. The problem is that the younger players are being ripped off, and the older players who used to get paid in the back end aren't getting paid in the back end.
But
now
that's the way it's structured. Right. That's the problem. The structure is the structure. You got to live within it. And this thing all started with Marvin Miller. How dare anybody criticize Marvin Miller? Marvin Miller took a bunch of guys making $7,500 a year and elevated them to at least they could live. They could absolutely live.
Right. And now it's $15 a beer.
Bob, it wasn't then.
Half.
Okay?
The median, if you take all the, what is it, the median income, in baseball is $1.5 million.
Right.
I'm telling you that to
That's
make
not true.
It.
What's the baseball minimum salary? It's over 1.5 million.
No, no, it's 500,000.
Like stop. What's the minimum?
Wrong.
Bob,
stop.
It's 500,000 minimum.
500 and some thousand okay. minimum. Okay. The okay. average. The now the average is 4 million. But if you take half the players below and half the players above, half the players make 1.5 million or less. That is not outrageous to make it in a sport where you only last 3 or 4 years and you have risen to the top 100th of 1% of all the people that play the game. They are not overpaid. And so,
you know what? I'm not going to disagree with you on that. I think that's a good point. I'm just going to say this to play devil's advocate. It is outrageous when, because of these salaries, I try to bring my family of four to one Detroit Tigers game, and it's going to cost me, what, $400 or $500?
$200.
I can't afford
hey, Bob,
that.
Hey, Bob,
I'm a working
hey, Bob,
man. I can't afford that.
Let me ask you, Bob, how many games did you go to last year? 6, 7, 8 games?
And
how'd you afford those?
Free for me.
How'd you afford
those?
They
were all free for me.
They were free for you.
Oh, they were free.
And, you know, most of the people that sit in the stadium don't pay for their tickets because they're given to them by the corporations.
Right.
That
well, how do they
the
make
ticket.
Money then? Oh, because they sell the tickets
that's right.
to the corporations.
Right.
Season
you,
tickets.
You've sat in row one. You've sat in row two with me. You've sat all over the place and never paid for a ticket. So quit your bitching about how expensive it is.
And the other thing about it, what riles people up is when you have a player like Cabrera who hits – way below what he's supposed to do, way fewer home runs than he's ever hit before, and they're paying him $30 million a year. Everybody gets upset. So what?
I understand.
Yeah.
I know, hey. Folks, you can email us, as so many of you like to do, asknofilter@gmail.com. And here's Ron.
Well, we got
great
him, didn't
podcast,
we?
Starting to become a regular listen for me. I had a good laugh about the Dan Tonio name misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. It made me think of a couple of my own. Who can forget the mid-1980s Calgary Flames, two great players, Hawk and Lube. They're the only players to always play on the same line their whole career. Now, you know what I'm talking about? Hawk and Lube, L-O-O-B. Yeah, his first name was Hawk and his last name was Lube. That's what he's getting at. I thought that was pretty funny. Now, this is an interesting letter here, especially for you, Eli. Love the show and all that you three have to offer. As a Clemson guy, I think he's a native of South Carolina, but he's living in Detroit now. It's tough to get Clemson even mentioned in sports radio in Detroit, even when discussing the playoff system. The comments about Clemson alumni funneling cash through the New Spring Church is absolutely ludicrous. And to suggest that they're not shows some hack journalism on your part at best. You can hear that all day long coming up Columbia, South Carolina, where, of course, University of South Carolina is, but you all are better than spouting that. And then Bob attempting to speak with a drawl to demean the South. It's all just such a joke.
Let me
keep up the great work, but stick to what you know and leave the conjecture at the door. And that's signed Anthony. But Anthony, I do speak with a Southern drawl.
I would like to ask Anthony this. How do you explain the fact that Xavier Thomas, the number three recruit in all of high school football in 2018, who has already owned three cars since he signed with Clemson, has a brand new house? You see, his dad sold his power washing business to a Clemson booster, and he was able to buy a beautiful $200,000 or $300,000 house.
That's great.
So there was an FBI wiretap. They caught an assistant basketball coach whose name was Smith. I don't know his first, but was on the quote saying, the key is to keep it secret like the football team does. That's why football is so successful. If you do it and use resources at Clemson, you can really keep everything tight. Okay, this is what he said in the wiretap, meaning keep it within the family, keep it within the booster family.
Right.
So here you have a kid whose father probably had a power washer worth, I don't know, $300-$400 and maybe a bucket to put the water in. Yeah, for $300,000. That's clever. That's how Clemson goes from a no team to a national champion year
in,
year out.
Okay, now I want to continue with this because Eli's claims – we never reveal, obviously, as reporters, sources. But Eli's claims about this came from a top major college football coach in the business at the top level. Anthony, what about your claims? Do you have any similar level sources to prove that Clemson is not doing this? Or are you just another head-in-the-sand fan of corrupt major college sports? And seriously, Anthony, why don't you write us back?
The Chase Young thing at Ohio State is so ridiculous that he would like be suspended games for borrowing a nickel from the guy next door. You know, you just wonder whether there's something much bigger there, and that's the smokescreen for it.
Let me throw one thing out. You want to have somebody on from Clemson? The former assistant athletic director. You don't want to have him on so he can talk about this.
If he's going to give the company line, no. I'd rather have a booster with his voice disguised to say,
well, who the hell would know him if his voice wasn't
I think
disguised.
We should talk to Jay Vincent, don't you?
I do a couple other things. First of all, I want to remind you folks, you can call us and leave a message at 760-869-BALL.
No, you screwed that up again.
Did I mess that up again?
760-89-BALLS. 760.
And as a lead in to Jay, an unnamed texter wrote, love all these interviews. You guys are getting the best guests of any show in Detroit. And another one wrote, just found your show. Good to hear voices from the past. I can't wait to listen to older episodes. So, folks, good. We're getting the guests and we're getting Jay Vincent.
All right. And Jay Vincent was a part of that team, of course, along with Greg Kelser, Magic Johnson, and others. And the next 2 years after Greg went pro and Magic did, he was the Big Ten scoring champ his junior and senior years, picked in the second round by the Mavericks in 81, played 9 years in the league, and has written a book. Oh, by the way, Jay, thanks for joining us. We're excited to talk to you. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I've seen having a good time, kind of sad news for a couple of the Spartans, but I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, we'll want to get to
He's
that.
He's also 60 years old, which is hard for me to believe.
you wrote the book, and that you signed for Bob a few years ago, My Story, the United States versus Jay Vincent. Let's start at the end and work back. You did spend some years in prison, and you wrote the book when you got out. You say you're regretful for who you may have harmed. What happened, and why did you write the book, and how is it going now?
Thanks for asking. Like I speak about everything, but started back. Michigan State gave me a huge award for basketball and business success back in 2009. You know, they gave me a big, huge trophy, and you know, I had a successful business called Foreclosure Bank Inspection Company. What got me in trouble, being a basketball player, trying to always think of the court. I was trying to outthink myself in business. I didn't report $500,000 in business income. And the feds didn't like the way I was advertising my company. And I didn't do all the background checks. Some were done, some were not. So they were upset about that. So that got me a 5.5 year a prison camp sentence. And I wrote United States versus Jay Vincent and NBA Secrets. Going back to the beginning, when Michigan State gave me an award, spoke for about 20 minutes at the banquet. And I met some good people. And one of those was David Williams. And when I got into trouble, which was 4 months or 5 months after I spoke at the banquet, I was raided by the feds. It was 40 agents. Some hit my office in Lansing. I ended up getting $24 million total in book contract, which was a blessing, which went into the Italy Trust there. And while I was in prison camp, and I named
how much did you, how much did you say you got?
How much?
24.2 for writing my book. The book I named United States versus Jay Vincent, because I wanted everybody to see what I went through, what I had to deal with, and all the dangers of going to a federal prison. Now, I went to a camp, which was like LCC College, but I had to get to that camp. You know, you're around murderers, you're around bank robbers, you're around people who, if you got small sentences, they want to fight you.
So, Jay, did they take you out of the courtroom right to jail?
Yes, they did.
Oh, my God.
I was shackled when I came in, and of course, everybody back at the jail thought that I was going to get probation. And boy, I thought I was going to get probation, too. Then once I got 68 months, I was shackled right out of there. No, yeah, I went from jail to sentencing, then from sentencing right back to jail and then to prison camp.
Well, since I had a little experience with these guys myself, I will add that you really pissed off somebody in the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Well, I tell everybody, you don't want to piss off anybody in the U.S. Attorney's Office. This is why I say that. You know, when the first case was first coming down on me, I tried to be tough. I said, oh, I'm going to sue somebody. I'm going to sue the postmaster. Once I started reading about what the U.S. Attorney does, and the U.S. Attorney was a good guy, and we both know U.S. attorneys can do what? They can charge you what they want, or they can leave some stuff off.
Yep.
The more you upset them, they can just put as many counts, as many more problems And after I figured that out, I said, ooh, there's a lot of things I shouldn't have said, but he didn't hold that against me. So I always tell people to leave the feds alone because they get a 98 to 99% conviction rate because if you go to trial, you're looking at almost double or triple your sentence. So
yeah, not only that, too, but the reason why they got a 98, 99% conviction rate is because most people plead guilty.
Correct. It's better to plead guilty for 2, 5, or 7 years and be facing 15, 25, or 30 years.
That's for sure.
And that's what the
Gee, I thought we were going to talk about basketball between you two guys. I'm learning more about the federal prison system than I ever dreamed or knew in my entire life.
Who knows? You keep going around. You may need this.
Well, it's a situation like this. I never wrote a book, but I've been in business for years. Like I said, my foreclosure bank inspection company, I built from $2,000. And took it to a $2 million a year company. So I messed it up. I'm not blaming anybody. I'm the one that didn't report $500,000 in taxes.
Sure.
Wasn't Izzo an assistant under Judd when you were there? So you saw Tom from the beginning of his career, correct or not?
No, I wasn't there when Tom was there. Tom was there when my brother Sam was there.
Okay, that's right, in the 90s, yeah.
Exactly. Where the 80s. Sam was there from, my brother Sam was there from 81 to 85. Of course, I was there from 77 to 81. So when Tom came along, my brother Sam was there. But it was just this young guy that they always were talking about. And my brother even was talking about that this guy, you know, who's just a grad assistant, was always wanted to help out. He always had some new ideas for Coach Heathcote. And, wow, look what happened there. Judd Heathcote, when he was getting ready to retire, he put in 1,000% to hire Tom Izzo. And look what Tom Izzo's career turned out to be.
Unbelievable.
What was Judd like to play for? Because we all remember that during your national championship season, you and Irvin and Greg got the team together for a players-only meeting and came out and told Judd, lay off us. You and the staff are too hard.
That's somewhat true. I won't go into all the details, but I go through one. I don't know if Greg has mentioned this. We had lost four in a row, and then Coach Heathcote had enough. So we're on the back of the bus. We're laughing and everything. But we're just upset. First of all, we lost 4-0, but we're still laughing. We're going back to the field house. Coach called a meeting. So when we got back to Jenison Field House, we were standing around Coach, and Coach was in the middle talking. Then he started taking off his coat. I'm like, what is he doing? So Coach said, you know what? I'm tired of this losing. I challenge anybody. I'll kick your ass.
No.
Anybody.
No.
Anybody. So Greg Kelso's trying to push me out there to go up there. But I'm like, what are you doing, Greg? What are you doing? And then Coach turned around and thought it was me. I'm like, I'm not saying anything. I'll fight anybody. That was one of the most hilarious things. It brought us together. Then we had our own team meeting because Coach left that meeting at the same time. And from then on, we went on until we lost to Wisconsin on that Hail Mary shot. We had won, I think, 14, 15 in a row. That took us all the way to the championship.
You led the Big Ten in scoring your junior and senior year. This is a Magic Johnson, Greg Kelser-dominated team. People don't remember that, and it's indicative of the lack of respect you got. Only a second-round pick of the Dallas, and you were a very good NBA player, a terrific post-up player. Now, Jay, listen to this. As you know, I covered you in high school at Lansing Eastern and Irvin at Everett. Probably was the first guy I ever put both you guys on TV. You guys were at most every Michigan game together your senior year in high school. I told Johnny Orr that he might not be able to get Irvin after all, but he might be able to get Jay Vincent. And Orr told me, and I quote, "We'll take Jay only if we have to get Irvin," end quote. I mean, that's a lack of respect that you always got, and you overcame all of it.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you the truth, because going back to what you said, I was always a scorer, of course, in high school. And then, of course, Magic was a passer, and somebody red, white, and blue, built like a deer, afro like Michael Jackson, that was 9 inches tall. Of course, he cut it at Michigan State. He was flashy. Then Greg Kelsey was a college, more or less, scorer, and a tremendous dunker. So you have a flashy guy, Magic, and you got Greg Kelsey, a dunker, who can still score. So even though I scored 25 or 28 points my first game as a freshman, it wasn't really noticed as much. Of course, when they left, that's when I went on to become a Big Ten scoring champ for the last 2 years. I was picked in the second round because I messed up a couple questions, and I'm going to give you those questions right quick. Hope, hopefully your listeners will be able to get it right.
Of course.
But they asked me, and it's in my book, and Bob, you got to read that book, you'll be able to see this stuff. They asked me, where do you play your best basketball?
At home
or away?
At home.
No, Denny plays in the gyms in downtown Detroit right now, okay, against all the brothers. That's where he plays. That's okay, he plays
that's
his best.
At home. Well, and where's Eli on there? Give me somebody else. You said home. Denny, okay.
Well,
anybody
else?
You know what? I've rethought my answer. I pitched a lot better on the road.
Okay, so you're going to say road. Okay. Yeah. Anybody else? Anybody else?
Well, I think that's the answer they'd be looking for. I would think you play better at home because teams win more at home, so the team plays better at home.
I'm disappointed. You obviously did not watch my news conference on ESPN 20 years ago in which I announced my retirement from basketball.
Thank God.
So I can't really answer that.
Well, I'll just do it this way. See, they try to get into your head, and I picked, which I really thought was, and it was from my heart, was I play best in the role because I want them to know that I'm going to go out there and fight. Because, you know, a lot of people play good at home. So I want them to know that I'm going to go out there on the road and bust my tail and win you some games on the road. But that was an incorrect answer. So you're supposed to say, I play my best at home and away.
There's
82 games.
I play my best all the time.
Exactly.
They
tricked me. And so not only did they trick me, they went around telling all the other NBA teams what I said. So I was supposed to go in the top 10, and I slipped all the way to 24 because a couple of those questions. I won't say anymore because I'm going to give you my website for somebody who want to go get my book. But that was part of it because I messed up a couple questions. I slipped. And I didn't mind messing up those questions, but when they went around and told the rest of the league, that kind of damaged my publicity around the league.
And I think you had a tough time getting started. It seems like you've always been in somebody's shadow. You were in Irvin's shadow because he was a superstar in East Lansing, and you signed first with the Spartans. Then he came along later. And when you got to Dallas, you had Aguirre there. And by the way, in your first game at State, Magic struggled. You came off the bench and scored 25. So there was that. And also, Aguirre got hurt. You were on the bench, and you came in, and that was your best year scoring the first year. You averaged over 21 points a game. So you seem to have kind of emerge from the shadow of others to achieve the success you had.
You know, you always got to be ready just in case. And, you know, I got to give it to Mark. Mark was the first player pick and a heck of a basketball player. You know, here I am 3 inches taller than him, and he had a bump move that he was powerful like a – more powerful than a Dantley could just stun you and then score down low. And he's only 6'4", 6'5", and he could take it out to the 3-point line and go around you or score. He was a heck of a player. So, yes, those players were better than me. I had no problem saying that. Yes, I did average. I did average 21. When he got hurt, I think the 15th or 16th game, I averaged 27 a game after he got hurt, but I brought my scoring average up to 21. With Magic, of course, Magic was flashy. So it's a difference there. As far as with Michigan, I want to answer your question about Michigan. Yes, I'd always thought that Johnny Orr, of course, wanted Magic, and they would take me. And they came and wanted to ask questions. I wouldn't even talk to Michigan because I always felt that, of course, they wanted Magic Johnson. So I didn't even go visit the University of Michigan or anything. My brother got a master's degree.
Well, not formally, but you were there at almost every home game your senior year with Irvin, as I said.
No, I never went to the University of Michigan.
I saw you, and I know.
No, I never went to the University of Michigan. Was at Johnny Orr's game.
Jay, keep this in mind. He's old, and he has a tendency to
go back. I saw Jay when he was 15 years old. I am old.
I was never at a University of Michigan game.
Let me change subjects for just a second here. They've just passed some new stuff legislation-wise within the NCAA to allow the kids to start making some money over a period of time
They're considering it. They have not done that.
Your impressions of what's going on there, should they allow it?
Well, that's a good question. I always think players should be able to get something, some type of stipend, simply because they earn the NCAA so much money.
Yeah.
It's going to, you see where the governors have passed it, and now the NCAA has ruled that they can do it. It's going to be on a system where, you know, if one college has alumni, it's going to pay you for speaking engagements. You know, of course, players are going to look to go there first. It's going to be hard to monitor because there's players, as you know, getting money right now. I think, I don't know what happened. I don't want to just say anything that I don't know, but you see the number one pick of the draft, they assume for next year from Memphis,
yep.
got disqualified.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, it had to be some money. Zion, they said he was getting money. Whoa, wow. I looked at some of the houses and cars he was driving. Somebody had to be doing something. So I just felt that maybe if they're not making millions and millions and millions of dollars, maybe they should have a nice stipend in there of $5,000 or $3,000 that if they go doing a speaking engagement that they can make that money. But not where they, you know, well, if you go do this speaking engagement for 10 minutes, we'll give you $1 million.
Yeah, well,
because
you know,
now it's going to. It'll make all the other student athletes feel bad. Not saying that they shouldn't get paid more than them, because sure. it's about who you are. True.
Of course.
Now, the last man on the bench should not get $10,000 if the star is getting $10,000.
Yeah.
But the last man on the bench or last lady on the bench should get something.
Well, especially now since we can now gamble on the basketball game.
We now
go to betting parlors, for God's sakes. I mean, it's incredible
how
it's
expanded. But, you know, the state of Michigan hasn't, you know, the governor hasn't passed that yet. So,
well, that hasn't stopped very many.
Exactly. You know, yeah, there's casinos and there's places like that, but everybody's waiting for the governor to pass that, but she's kind of holding up right now.
Yeah, it's coming.
We'll see what goes on from there. So that's, you know, basically what happened throughout my career. I've always had to battle up, but in the long run, you know, you have a short career. I could have had a longer career by just being quiet. I was one of these guys.
Well, you were also done at age 30. You played with the Sixers and the Lakers in 89-90. That was your last year, and you averaged over 15 points a game for your entire career. That's pretty impressive. Just injuries took their toll?
Correct. And then I went overseas and played for 4 years, and that's where I got my book contract. I made over $1 million-plus a year for 4 years over there. So that is where I got my book contract. I got my book contract from MSU 1969 Alumnus Company. That was through David Williams. That was the first one. Then the second one was from Baker in Italy. They're all in the book. And the next one was Frantex in France, because I was All-Stars in Italy. But, you know, I'm not saying Italy is not the NBA.
Yeah.
But still, I played well. And they remembered me many years ago. I always thought I had a great story to tell, which was United States versus Jay Vincent, my story in NBA secret. So
yeah.
I'm basically 60 and retired now. It was great seeing Denny McClain. I was great seeing you, Denny.
It was fun the other day. It was a lot of fun the other day. Yeah.
It was great watching you pitch and stuff like that. See, so, and funny, man, you and Dave Rosema, I mean, God, you guys are funny as heck. So, but I want to give everybody if you want to mark this down, if you want to get book, because it's a great book. I have a color book now with all the color pictures. I got 35 new color pictures in the book. It's Jay Vincent. That's J-A-Y. B as in Victor, I-N-C-E-N-T, B-O-O-K-S, the number 31.com. So it's Jay Vincent Books.
31.
31's a good number.
Jay Vincent Books, 31.
That's a great number.
You know, I had to put my name in there. You're right there. And I had to, it's a book that I'm selling, and I had to get my number in there. So
will you stop with the salesman stuff?
Let me ask you this.
Salesmanship stuff. we haven't even asked you.
Wait a second.
About the magical year. So you guys just, after your early troubles, which you discussed earlier in this interview, you guys just blew everybody away in the NCAA tournament. You beat Penn by a ridiculous number in the semifinals. Now you play Larry Bird and Indiana State for the national championship in what is still the highest rated NCAA tournament game ever on TV. What was that game like to be part of? What was it like going into the game? What do you recall about that?
And he had a broken foot that you played through, too.
Well, I was about to mention that. It was great. The only downer was I had a stress fracture, broke my foot that wouldn't heal. Basically, like the current Spartan right now, I had the second surgery done. Bill Walton was the first one. I had his where they took a little steel rod, put it in my fourth metatarsal, let it heal for 2 months, 3 months, and they pulled it out. That was the only thing that healed me. But going into the game, other than that, knowing that I couldn't be out there, I was third leading scorer, the second leading rebounder, and I really couldn't go out there and prove anything because I was hurt. But I still was a part of the game. I think I played 15, 16 minutes, had 5 points, 4 rebounds. But it was great to see the guys going out there and really taking it to Larry Bird. I mean, this guy couldn't miss anything, and I watched that game a few times. Some of the shots he missed, he doesn't miss. he had the quickest shot. You see him in the pros. His release was almost like Steph Curry. And he wouldn't miss just like Steph Curry doesn't miss. But it was just great. Yes, it was the highest rated game. It was one of those games that I'll never forget. It was just that one downer because I really wasn't out there to be able to showcase my talent, to be able to help my team because I had broken.
And you were a 6'7" center. But that was an interesting team because you're all about the same height, right? Irvin's 6'7", Kelsey's 6'7", you're 6'7". Would a team like that make it in today's game without a 6'10", 6'11", or a 7-footer?
Well, yeah, I think in today's game, because I think a lot of teams now just get up and down their floor. We probably would have to run a little bit more. You're right. I think we're about the same height. I think Magic's a little bit taller than me. I've been 6'8". Ron Charles about a little taller, about 6'7" and a half. But I'm 6'7 3/4, basically almost 6'8". Greg Kelsey was 6'7", but a leaper. But in today's game, you're getting up and down that floor, which we still ran, but we had a nice post-up game with myself. Of course, Greg was over the rim, jumping 2 or 3 feet over the rim, and you got Magic bringing that ball up. You had Berkovich shooting the lights out, and you had Terry Donnelly. Then we had a nice little bench as well. So, yes, but it's a little bit different game now because nowadays people are trying to get up and down the court a little bit faster, and then they're taking more threes. Now, yes, they did move the three-point line back with about 18 inches or something like that, so that does stop everybody from making the easy three, but still it's a little bit different game. But I think we would have hung tough and could play with anybody.
Easy three. Everybody said an easy three. Listen, let me ask you this. I haven't heard much about Magic Johnson since we've been talking here. Magic Johnson was the show, right? He was the showboat on the team.
Correct.
Did you want to be more like him? Was your personality such that you could have been if you wanted to be? And was he the leader on the team?
Magic definitely was the leader. And I tried to be like Magic. I think I dribbled the ball down. I think it was my sophomore junior year a couple times because I could do that a few times, but I couldn't do it like Magic. Magic, again, if you look at his body, you look at his 6'8", he's built like a deer, fast. And he was the first one. He was doing a look away. He looked one way and passed the other. Yeah. Nobody had ever seen that. Other than if you start looking at Pete Maravich and the pros and some other pros, but as far as the high school level, we're 15 years old. Here come a 6'8 guy dribbling down the basketball, throwing the opposite direction. That was just incredible to watch and see. And then you go on to Michigan State still to see the same thing. He was a great leader. I was more of a quiet person, but he was a great leader. And when we really – one thing about Magic, we always felt as long as he was on the court, we had a great chance to win because he had that in him that if we got the rebound, which either he would get or we got – and we get it to him on that fast break, we were running.
And you had a great mix of talent.
You had that happen.
You had a mix of talent. Magic was the flash, not a great shooter, but he set everything up. Kelsey was the dunker, and you had that nice touch around the hoop. You could hit that 17-footer. You had great soft hands. And, hey, thanks for joining us today, Jay. We got the name of the book out there, Jay Vincent Books 30 at 31.com. Check it out, everybody. And thanks for spending some time with us, Jay. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. I just want to say make sure everybody keep in mind that and say a prayer for Cassius Winston family who committed suicide. Yeah. And then, of course, Rogers. Remember him, the football player who died yesterday, too. So
we sure will.
That's all our Spartans. Thanks for having me.
Jay, thanks a million. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you, Jay. Bye-bye. Now, I got one other thing in the wake of Jay Vincent that I don't think a lot of people know this. We've got Michigan playing Creighton in Ann Arbor Tuesday night. This is the Gavitt Invitational. And then a huge game in New Jersey on Thursday night featuring nationally ranked Seton Hall against Michigan State. Here's the deal. Miles Powell, Seton Hall's senior point guard, preseason first-team All-American, preseason Big East Player of the Year, suffered a severe ankle sprain in a game over the weekend. He is out indefinitely. He will not play Thursday night against Cassius Winston, and boy, were we looking forward to that. And so Seton Hall will be out their best player and one of the five best in the country Thursday night against Michigan State.
All right.
Well, I know who I'm going to bet on.
Yeah. It's going to change the line, though, Denny. It's all taken.
It helps. Yeah. Changing that line makes a big difference in the big boys' daily life.
So long, everybody. Thanks for joining us again Thursday.
You.